Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm so pleased because I have Patricia Lorenz as my guest. She is known really internationally for her inspirational art of living, writing, and speaking. 14 books to her credit, 75 stories in the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. Lots of you know about those books. And many other writing magazines, newspaper articles, that sort of thing. And so we're going to do a show about her book, 57 Steps to Paradise, Finding Love in Midlife and Beyond. But I want to say before we bring Patricia on that this show is intended for everyone looking for love. Whatever your age, background, dating history, or sexual preferences or intentions. Isn't that right, Patricia? It's for anyone looking for love. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Diana. I am just honored and thrilled to be here. And you are absolutely right. Love is for everyone, and it's a must, I think, for everyone.
Yeah, at the end of life, we won't worry. I mean, the cliche is we won't worry about having spent more time at the office. It's about how we've loved, who we've loved, and you have on the back cover of your book, looking for love in your 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and yes, even your 80s and 90s. So your book will help the person navigate dating in midlife and beyond.
Well, I hope so. I certainly hope so. But I have to tell you, at the very beginning, you know, when I was growing up, I had one of those really, really happy, normal Midwestern families. I grew up in Northern Illinois, and my parents loved each other, and I had one brother and one sister, and I thought I would go to college and, you know, meet my Prince Charming and get married and have 2.5 children, which is the national average, you know, and
yeah,
then
right.
I would have a house with a white picket fence, and everything would just be lovely, and I would have a marriage just like my parents. But you know what, Dr. Diana? It didn't happen. I was married, divorced, and annulled twice. And during that time, I had 3 children in 3.5 years by my first husband and one child with my second husband, who was 17 years older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so I experienced all kinds of different things than my parents did. And then when I was divorced, my second husband left me for an older woman, which is pretty bad when you consider most of them leave you for a younger one.
Indeed.
But he left me, and he married her on the day of our divorce, and then he died 2 years later.
Mm.
So I had to raise, you know, his child as well as my other 3 from my first husband by myself. And so for the next 20 years, I did that, and I had children in college every single year for 17 years in a row. And
that's incredible.
I'm here to tell you.
Yeah.
And I worked as a radio copywriter. I wrote 40,000 radio commercials, which I have now decided was 39,000 too many for one lifetime. But
that's a lot of radio commercials to write, 40,000.
Yep. And I kept plugging away, and I kept thinking, you know, every year I realized that I was happy. I don't know why or how, but because I think the most I ever made in my life was $27,000 when I was raising these kids. And so it wasn't about money at all, and it just turned out that I began to realize that, you know, I was a happy person, and I'd been dating off and on, and then I finally, when I got the kids out of school and they were out on their own, I moved to Florida in 2004, and I started. Well, I met a man down here, and we dated, and then we broke up after 6 years, and then we, you know, got back together, and so now I'm married, and I'm very happy. However, I wanted to write this book because there are so many women that I have met in the last 20 years who are, like you say, in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way up to their 90s.
Yes, yes.
Who are wondering, do I want to get into a relationship again? Do I want to go through the dating process? Do I want to find a man to live with or a woman? you know, if it's a man looking or if it's a woman looking for a woman or a man looking for a man, it doesn't matter. It's scary as heck to be thinking about getting into a relationship if you've been in two or three or four in your lifetime. So I thought, well, I'm just going to unzip my soul and expose my foibles. And I decided to write this book about all the men that I had met in my life, the men that I had dated, the men that I had married, and the interesting guys that I only talked to on the telephone after, you know, we all start the internet dating thing. And that's kind of neat because you don't have to meet them if you don't want to. So that's what I did, and that's why I wrote the book.
And you did such a good job. Of course, you are a writer, and you're also, you write with humor. And so as I read your book, 57 Steps to Paradise, Finding Love in Midlife and Beyond, I found myself chuckling here and there, and that's always a good quality. And Jack Canfield, who was the co-author of many of the, or all of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books, he says on your back cover, the blurb, that you have been one of his favorite writers since you began writing stories in 1995 for so many of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books, and that you're a master storyteller, and you are. I mean, there are so many really great stories in the book. So, but just, so you talked about your motivation for writing this tell-all book about your past dates and husbands and interim boyfriends. And the motivation was to unzip your soul, I guess you said, and to help others who are thinking about deciding to branch out again.
That's right. And I think I started it out actually as a memoir because I do include, you know, a story about my first husband and a story about my second husband and lots of things. For instance, from 1994 until 2004, I ran a crash pad in my home in Milwaukee. I lived in Milwaukee for 24 years. And I ran a crash pad for airline pilots in my home. I had a six-bedroom home, and three of my kids were already out and on their own, and I was raising my son, Andrew, who was 12, I think, at the time. He must have been a little younger than that. But anyway, I decided that my brother is a pilot for UPS, and he said, you should have a crash pad here because you're 5 minutes from Milwaukee's airport, and I didn't even know what a crash pad was, really.
Mm-hmm,
and it's,
mm-hmm.
You know, the airlines don't pay for the pilots to stay in the place where they are based, and so we had an airline based in Milwaukee, Midwest Airlines, and they need a place to stay that's cheap because the airline doesn't pay for their hotel expenses if they're based
there. I never
there.
Knew that, actually.
Yeah.
I always assumed
that there's crash
the airline
pads all
would
over
pay.
This country.
Yeah.
But you have to have an airline based in that city. You know, there's crash pads
right.
in Louisville for UPS and, you know, Chicago for United and, you know, Dallas for whatever airline is based in these major cities. So I did that. I opened up my home to these pilots, and it was an amazing adventure because my rule was they had to be happily married with children because I was still raising a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not want any funny business going on in my house. I wanted
mm-hmm.
them to be good role models for my son. So over those years, those 10 years that I ran that crash pad, I had 40 different pilots staying in my house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dr. Wiley, you have to imagine this.
Oh, Patricia, do call me Diana. It's fine.
Okay. Thanks. Good-looking men in uniform.
Yeah.
Coming in and out of my house at all hours
yeah.
of the day and night. You know, of course, what the neighbors thought. Right?
Yes, yes, but they also knew you were
they knew
a
me,
Christian
but I'm sure
woman.
A few of them thought, what is going on over there? But like I say, they were all happily married, and they were the most wonderful role models for my son. You know, one pilot would say, hey, Andrew, I want you to come out and hold the drop light so I can work on my crash pad car. Another guy would say, Andrew, let's go watch the Packer game tonight. And one would say, hey, let's build a treehouse out there in that backyard. because some of them were there for, you know, 3 or 4 days at a time if they were on reserve. And
right.
another guy would say, now, Andrew, when you get into high school, you really should invest in mutual funds. Now, here's a
wow.
child who had no father. His father died when he was 9.
Yeah.
And he was getting a smattering of how to be a man from 40 different guys during
and
that whole
40 different
period.
Guys being father figures.
Exactly.
And getting kind of a nice cross-section of
And it was so
advice.
Nice. It was magical in our home, you know. I felt safe
yeah.
there at night. They shoveled the driveway for me. They spent time with my son. It was just magical. They did their own
mm-hmm.
cooking. They even cleaned their own bathroom. I'm telling you, it was fabulous.
Boy, airline pilots must be well trained.
They are, and they're all smart, and they're all funny. They all have a great sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just a really neat way for me to get my fix of men without getting involved with any of them. You know, I
right.
got to be with men and talk to men and watch football with men and, you know, ask questions about the sump pump with men, you know, and yet I didn't have to be involved with any of them on a relationship angle. It was just me running this crash pad and giving them a bed and a clean place to sleep when they were there. And yet I think my son and I got more out of that than the pilots did, really. So that was another way that I wanted, another story that I wanted to include in this book, because it's about men and living with men and how to deal with, you know, men and the different ways men are. So, I that's what I did in this book, was include a lot of my own personal history stories about different relationships I had with men over the years. And then, of course, I moved to Florida and found my hunka-hunka burning love.
And you tell that story in the book. And also, a lot of people will wonder, what, 57 Steps to Paradise? Maybe we should just fast forward a little bit and then come back to talking about your book kind of in order, like your favorite story in the book. And
oh,
you have,
all right.
And, but, well, actually, let's let the listening audience wait for that. What does 57 Steps to Paradise mean? So we'll tease them a little bit with that. So you wrote this tell-all book, and I think it's quite wonderful. As I said, it's really very positive and very well written. You have a section. Let me see. I'm looking at your book now. So
I know what you're going to ask. You're going to ask about the sections in the back of the book, the 30 questions.
Well, not
to ask
quite
them.
Yet.
Not yet.
I do want to get to that.
Okay.
But you have a chapter 7, and I'm looking at page 58, and this is back before internet, but how to write a great personal ad, which is the same thing as writing for, except it gets broadcast perhaps more widely, for online things. And
well, that's
and,
funny.
Yes, and
I,
so how to write
class,
a good yes, how to write a really good profile.
Yeah, that's important because you know, most people, I think, nowadays are finding their mates online at the various
yes.
Dating sites.
And
I really
and I did,
into,
and I guess you did way back with
yeah,
Jack.
I dated a lot of men. I actually talked to a lot of men on the phone through the websites or the dating sites, and then I narrowed it down, and then I would go out with a few of them if I really, after we'd had 3 or 4 conversations on the phone,
mm-hmm.
I would agree to go out with them at a you know public restaurant or wherever, and then I would decide if I wanted to go out again, and I'm telling you, it must have been 95% of the ones I met, I would decide on the first date that that was going to be the last date. So I was very picky, and I think every woman and man who is doing the personal should really be picky and you know
I
don't
agree.
Waste your time.
And I
you
was
know.
Too after my husband's death. I was very picky, but I think in writing personal online profiles, and then if you get together and you're very good at this, do be clear if you're not interested. You know, instead of leading someone on, a simple thanks, but I'm otherwise engaged, is really a gracious way of saying it without being hurtful. And I think most people would want to be let down easy too, like this.
Oh, sure. Everybody has feelings that can be hurt. But I think when you're in that mode of dating and you're doing the personals and, you know, emailing each other back and forth and then talking on the phone and then going out, you really know what you're looking for. And that's, you know, I think there's so many different questions you need to ask your potential dating partners, and there's just so many things to think about. And that's, you know, I did put a lot of that in the back of this book for that reason.
Yeah, well, let's go to that, because I think it's very useful, in the back of your book. You have three sections, 30 questions to ask men when you're dating. Now, of course, you could change the gender. It could be to ask women if a man is reading it, but let's face it, most self-help books are read by women, right?
So. Absolutely. You know that 80% of all books in America are purchased by women. So
And as an author of many, many books, that's very interesting, Patricia. 80% of books are purchased by women.
That's what I heard. So I think it's true, and I think maybe women are buying books for men, hopefully, or maybe men are just, you know, reading online or whatever. But anyway, the first section was 30 questions to ask men while you're dating, and the second one is the zero factors, 37 things to avoid in your potential partner, and then, of course, the plus factors, the things you definitely want to look for. So for me, I think the price of the book is worth those three sections. If anybody who's out there looking for a relationship or thinking about starting to date, they need to read these three. Actually, the editor titled them appendices. You know, it's just like an appendix in the back of the book. But there's three separate sections, and I really think that those sections will help people more than anything else, just to get their dating life in order, you know.
I agree with you. So jump into maybe not all of the 30 questions, but, I actually highlighted a few of them.
The 30
questions, 30 questions to ask when you're out on your first date. I do think that, in general, it's a lovely thing on a first date to smile a lot. You know?
Absolutely.
And to be honest about yourself. But anyway, go to your, because we're having a conversation here, of course, but
some of the things
I want to hear about it.
They're really important that you need to ask, and you don't necessarily have to ask them on the first date. You need to spread these out over 2 or 3 months if it's somebody that you're truly interested in. You know, for instance, have you ever been arrested? You know, do you have any pets? Will you travel without your pets? Have you ever done or do you use recreational drugs? What's the one thing you like about yourself the most? Do you have any specific personality traits that you'd like in your life partner? You know, you want to know whether or not your potential dating partner is interested in you. Haven't you been out, Diana, on a lot of dates where the man talks and talks and talks and talks? First he talks about his ex-wife, and then he talks about himself. I went out once with a man who was very nice. He was kind-hearted. We sat on the edge of the Gulf of Mexico down here in Florida, and we talked. We had a lovely time. We went into this little cafe right next to us, and he bought me an iced tea, and he called me that night, and just kept calling and calling and talking and talking and talking about himself. And I let him call me because he was very nice, and I was interested in hoping that at some point he would be interested in something about me so we could get this, you know,
the
ground. But in 3 days of him calling me at least twice a day, He never once asked me one question about myself. He didn't care to know, you know, anything about me, not my life, my children, my interests, my career, anything. And so I had to let him go because it was just too one-sided. He was just determined to fill me with hours of blather about himself, and it just wasn't fair. So I had to break loose of him. But some
well,
of the other
it's a red
here,
flag. It's a red flag because I think it indicates a fairly narcissistic personality.
Right.
It's all about
him.
I thought
he was just afraid. I think he was afraid to open up.
That happens. There's some nervousness that can create that.
Right. Yes. Let's see. Some of these other questions are, how often do you travel? Do you travel only for business or for pleasure? What kinds of foods do you like? And if a lot of these people, of course, you know, this book is for people 40s and over, and a lot of them are retired. So I put the question in, since you're retired, how do you fill the hours in an ordinary day? Do you belong to any organizations? Do you know why your marriage failed, your other marriage or your other relationship?
That's a very good question, because you want to know if they've kept their eyes open and they have learned and improved. What lessons did they take away from a failed marriage?
Right, exactly. Because if they didn't learn anything, they're going to repeat the same thing over, no doubt.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
So, yeah, just lots of questions like that. I just wanted to, you know, help people. I think I even mentioned in the book, don't worry about asking all these questions on the first date. Just write three of them down on a piece of paper each time you go out on a date. And if the conversation lulls at dinner, you can excuse yourself, go to the bathroom, and read your piece of paper and remember the three questions that you're going to ask that night.
Yeah, it's your little cheat sheet.
Exactly.
On a date, that's good. One of the questions that I really like is, because as we talked off the air, and the listening audience here knows that that I was widowed a number of years ago, and then I was online dating, and finally met my prince. Yeah, 6 years ago. 2 years after I moved to Seattle, 8 years ago. So, and I met Brian through Match.com. So I'm a believer in online dating, of course, but it has to be done a particular way, and you have lots of good advice. And I do, too. You know, I think it's important to reflect, and it can be a gross experience to write an online profile to date in terms of social skills, but for online profiles, I think it's good to ask yourself, what's my best quality? You know, because a person can use what they've got to get what they want. And
Right. And
I encourage some of my clients to think about the last time that they were turned down for a date or disappointed on a first date, and were there any things that perhaps they could have done differently? So if you can learn to broadcast your best qualities, you'll get more, you know, of what you want in life and perhaps get turned down less.
Well, that's true. But, you know, on the other hand, too, we have to be ourselves. You know,
yes.
We can't be Miss Prim and Proper and only discuss certain subjects and, you know, be smiling constantly, because that's not what life is like. You know, we have bad days someday, and maybe that would be a question you'd want to ask, because how do you deal with a bad day or a depressing day? Or, you know, how do you react when people make you angry?
Yeah.
You know, things like that, because we all have our foibles, and we all make mistakes, and we all screw up and say the wrong thing at the wrong time. And, you know, that's not a reason necessarily that you're not going to date anybody anymore. You just want to know how they react to those things.
Precisely.
And it's a good conversation starter.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I like what you said, you know. How does somebody deal with a bad day?
Mm-hmm.
But on the negative side of things, I mean, a different topic, but I think it's a big mistake, and you write about this, to talk about your exes and all their problems. I mean, that's a real downer for most people.
That's a zero factor.
You talk about the zero factor,
three or four months down the road when you're, you know, in a relationship, and then is the time to, you know, maybe talk a little bit about what you learned from that ex or what you learned from the breakup or whatever, but not at the beginning. I have dated a number of men who spent the whole first date bad-mouthing their ex-wife, and I just wanted to get out of there faster than
because it's such a huge turnoff.
Exactly, it's a big zero factor. Zip.
Yeah, it is. But your question in your book: what did you learn? Well, first, what are the reasons you think your former marriage failed, and what did you learn from it? I mean, those are really informative questions, and if you get a really good answer, you're going to learn a lot more about your prospective partner, right?
And if they're willing to admit that they were partially at fault, you're even further ahead in the game, because as we both know, there is no marriage breaking up that is only one person's fault.
No, it's a couple's problem, always a couple's problem.
Yes, so you know, they just didn't have what it takes to get along together, and but there has to be something that they learn from that experience that they're not going to repeat in the next relationship, or you know, at least be willing to share with their next potential partner what it was that happened, and you know, hopefully they're not going to be so naive as to blame everything on the ex-partner or the ex-wife or ex-husband. That they can admit that some of the fault was theirs. Maybe they were too young. You know, maybe this was a marriage that started when they were 19 years old, and now, you know, he's in his 50s or 60s, and he can understand that they just didn't have what it takes in terms of maturity to make the marriage work. And that, I believe that. You know, that's a good reason.
I believe it, too, and I think we do so much changing in our 20s. And that actually is one reason, in my view, and I counseled my daughter and son about this, too, to wait till you're closer to 30 to get married, because you do do all these changes. And, and then the other thing that happens with very young relationships is that there's a, we're often, when we're in our 20s, drawn to somebody who is better developed in certain areas than we are. So it's that mirror neuron effect. And
yeah, we want somebody to solve all our problems for us.
Right, or balance us out. And, you know, couples that are more whole, better developed, you have 1 + 1 = 3 at times, because you've got the synergy going. And whereas if you're in your 20s, it may be the idea that, well, I'm not quite whole, I'm a half, but if I hook up with somebody who's also a half, we might equal a whole. Well, that's not going to be a real healthy relationship, typically.
Right. Sounds good to me, that's for
sure. Yes. So let's go back, Patricia, to your book, because it is a wonderful book, listening audience, and of course I'll get this book on Amazon, 57 Steps to Paradise, Finding Love in Midlife and Beyond. You have a favorite story in the book. And
well,
I think we should spend a few minutes talking about that. I was totally enthralled by this story. Your publicist sent me the book, and I love your book.
Well, thank you. My favorite story has a lot of humor in it, and I have always said that, you know, there are five things we need to be happy in this world, and one of those five things is laughter.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's why I included this story in the book, because I wanted to people to lighten up and know that dating isn't the most serious thing you have to do in your whole life. And I just love this story because luckily when I was going through this was two dates that happened, one on a Saturday night and one the next Sunday, the very next day. And all my other dates in the previous months had been through the online dating sites, and most of them, like I said, I didn't even meet in person. I just would either email them first, and then if I liked them enough, I would agree to talk on the phone, and then we would go out. But most of them, I didn't even go out. So here now, my friend calls me, and she wants to fix me up because she knows this man. He lives in her building, and they live in a beautiful high-rise condo right on the Gulf of Mexico in San Key, up here north of where I live. And I'm thinking, oh, Phyllis and Harvey know this man. He must be wonderful. And I was so excited. I said, okay, fine, I'll go out on a blind date. And he picked me up, and he was not too bad looking and tall and very, very friendly and polite. And he opened up the car door, and we met my friends at the restaurant and had just an amazingly fun, wonderful dinner. And he was quite the gentleman all evening. And so when I got home from the date, I emailed my four best girlfriends, all one big email, you know, and copied them on this email, and I told them all the details. Oh, my gosh, this is Prince Charming for sure. And I said, and because I felt very safe with him, I agreed to watch the Packer playoff game with him in his condo the next day on the golf in the same building where my friends live.
Uh-huh.
Which I would never do normally. I mean, that's kind of brazen, you know, to go to a man's house on the second date. But it was just to watch the Packer game, and I'm a huge Packer fan because I lived in Milwaukee for 24 years.
Of course.
And I wanted to watch the playoff game, but he wanted to see me again in the worst way. And I said, well, I'll only agree to it if we can watch the playoff game together. So I said, I'll even bring some chili and a salad that we can eat at halftime. And so he told me to come to his condo at 4 o'clock because the playoff game started at 5, I believe. And he said, be here at 4, and that way we can go for a walk on the beach. You know, he wanted to show me his digs and, you know, the beach and everything. And I thought, oh, this sounds wonderful, because this is a guy that loved to be outdoors and swim in the Gulf and all that. So I thought,
all the stuff you like.
Oh,
high expectations, right?
Yes, of course. And
yes.
So I arrived with my little container of chili and my salad, and I arrived about 5 minutes after 4, because I'm always on time, and I was just 5 minutes late, and I ring the doorbell, and he appears at the door in his baggy, whitey-tighty underwear, nothing else on, and he's got this yapping dog that just was one of those little tiny dogs that just yaps, yaps, yaps at a high pitch.
Yeah, they're very
never shuts up,
difficult.
And he had shaving cream all over his face.
Uh-huh.
Now, what guy is going to answer the door like that? You can at least wipe the shaving cream off and put a towel around your waist, you know?
Indeed.
And then apologize profusely for being super, super late. But he is like more concerned. He says, oh, you're early. I said, no, I'm not early. I'm actually 5 minutes late. And he said, oh, well, he grumbles. And this dog is jumping up on me, and I'm like really nervous because this dog was just driving me crazy. And I didn't know what to do. I thought, should I just turn around and go home? I did not know what to do. So he finally talked me into coming in, and he went and got dressed and came out. And the whole date was a total disaster. His place was a mess. It was like a hoarder's existence in a few of the rooms, including his dining room table. I mean, papers stacked up about 3 feet tall, and I'm thinking, gosh, how are we even going to find a place to have our little lunch at halftime, you know?
It's a big turnoff when you've got that kind of clutter, and it actually reflects maybe the state of his mind.
Well, I don't know. he had been out with his guy friends, I think, for lunch that day, or late brunch, and he had probably gotten back early and, you know, forgot what time we said we were going to, he probably forgot about the nice walk that I was really looking forward to along the beach, but whatever, I mean, it went from bad to worse. He kept standing up during the game, and he'd lean over me, and he'd say, "You look like you could use a kiss." And I'd say, "No, no, that's fine. I'm good, you know. Just sit back down there." And he'd say, "Well, why don't you come over here?" He had a big L-shaped sofa. "Why don't you come over here and sit on my side?" And I said, "No, I can see the TV just fine, thanks." You know, I knew pretty much from the beginning that I was never going to see him again because everything about the date and about how he lived, and even the dog, he never put the dog in a room. He never asked the dog to be quiet. He let that dog jump on me for 3 hours. And why, you're probably saying, why on earth did you stay for 3 hours? Well, I wanted to watch the game.
I thought, Anna, we're all
you know, kind of, it's getting to be halftime, and I'm starving. And I said, "Can I make the chili now?" And he says, "Oh, no, I'm still full from brunch." And so I'm starving to death. And he finally, in the third quarter, he gets out a big bag of candy. And I sat there and I counted. He ate 14 big, huge chocolates. Mm. Now he's definitely not hungry. I'm starving. I could not wait to get that food on the table when the game was over, eat it, and beat the heck out of there and get home so I could write to my girlfriends and say, tell them about the nightmare that this date was. Oh, my gosh. And so, you know, I put some humor into the whole story, and it made me feel better in the end that I was able to do that. And then I wrote to him the next day, and I explained to him why I was, you know, it wasn't going to work for us. And he apologized profusely and wanted to start all over. And believe me, that was one of those dates where you just could not start over again.
Yes, and you put that note that you wrote to him in your book. And
right.
And also the letters that, I know you told me off the air you kept a journal, which has really informed your book so much because it's a bit like a memoir. But, yeah, you knew this was not going to be somebody, but you let him down easily, but you were also very honest, and I liked that.
Right. I was very polite, you know, at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even at the end of the game when I got up to fix the food, he said he had to go walk the dog. So there I was in his kitchen. I couldn't find any pots or pans to warm up the chili or any dishes to put the salad on or any place on the table to set the food because there was so much junk on his table. But somehow I managed. And we ate quickly, and then he said, "Well, let's go back in the living room and talk." And I'm like, "No, no, no, I have to go home." I raced out of there at 9 o'clock at night, and that was it for me. But
right.
Yeah, you're right. I did. I was very kind to him, and I thought, you know, when I told my friend Phyllis that had set me up about it the next day, she was horrified, of course.
Yeah.
And I said, "Don't feel bad because you didn't know this side of him, and you know, she didn't know any of this was going to happen." But she says, "You have to write and tell him the reasons why you won't go out with him again and tell him what he did wrong." I mean, for one thing, like just little teeny tiny things, Diana. He didn't even have soap in the soap dispenser in the guest bathroom. So, you know, that's like, come on.
My goodness, yeah.
A simple little thing like that.
But
is important
actually a
to
big
a woman.
Thing.
Maybe not to a man, but,
yeah.
You know, I didn't want to, at my age, I don't have the patience to start over, and I don't want to train a man to be a decent human being. I refuse to do that.
No.
That's one reason I love my hunka burn and love so much. Jack is just a peach because, you know, here's another thing that all women especially, and men really, should know. I think the best second or third spouse is someone who has been happily married for many years. You know, Jack was married to his just a wonderful woman named Jane for 43 years. They had 6 children. He adored her. She adored him. They had a great marriage. And unfortunately, you know, she died in her early 60s. And he is the kind of guy who can take care of himself. He you know, he helps me with things, or he can do it himself. He can, you know, if he eats things that are totally different than I eat. So a lot of times in the evening, he'll cook, you know, a frozen pot pie instead of what I want to eat at my mm-hmm. place. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't think we've told the listeners yet that one of the reasons our marriage is made in heaven right now is because we have two separate condos.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
well, now we're getting to the 57 step idea. So let's talk about that, Patricia.
Well, when I met Jack, I was living in Milwaukee, and he talked me into moving down here. My kids were all grown and on their own, and I had this big house to take care of. I was getting, you know, I had done the crash pad with the pilots for 10 years. I was tired of the snow and the ice and the cold up there, and I thought, why not? It's time to, you know, think about my retired years. So I sold my house, bought a condo in the same building where Jack lived, and he was thrilled.
Mm-hmm.
So that summer we really started dating seriously, and we dated for 6 years, you know, going back and forth from his condo to my condo, and they are 57 steps apart.
Yes.
And so it's you know, I for all those years when I was raising my kids, I was head of my household. I made all the decisions. If the sump pump broke, I had to fix it. I had to figure out how to put new gutters on the house and do this and do that and buy new windows. And
you
made
gained
all
a
the
lot
decisions.
Of skills, didn't you?
Well, you have to do it. That's
you
what
have
I
to
had
it.
To do, because there was nobody else to do it. And I learned to love it. I learned
Good.
To love being
Patricia.
In charge of my stuff. And so here I am now. I've got my condo. It's paid for. I paid for it myself. And it's got all my things in it, because I gave away or sold 2/3 of everything I owned in Milwaukee when I moved to Florida. And so everything here is stuff I love. And there's not 1 inch of space in my condo for anything that belongs to Jack. So, bless his heart, he agreed to be the one who would have the marriage bed in his house. So we sleep together every single night in his condo. And here's another reason I love this man so much, is that he gave me his entire master bedroom closet. So all my clothes live at his house. But every morning
yeah,
we get up.
Yeah, that's generous of him.
It is. It, you know, there's another little closet that he uses, but I get the big one. And so every morning we get up, we go to water aerobics across the street, we exercise, we come home, we have breakfast at his house, his condo, and then I make the trek, the 57 steps, and walk to my condo and begin my day. It's as if we each have a job, but his job is to watch sports from a recliner. And he does other things around here. He's the president of our condo building and
yeah.
the head usher at church. And he has, you know, different things to do. And his kids are all down here. But my job is to write books and to run my speaking career and to entertain
exactly.
my friends. And to I want to be in the place where I can paint my toenails and pay my bills and you know, read a book in silence without the TV being on. And so I go to my place, and I'm here usually 12 hours a day, from 11 in the morning till 11 at night. Now, Jack comes for dinner usually, you know, in the evening here, and in the afternoon he'll come down and bring me the mail, or I'll go down to his house and borrow an egg, or we'll just, you know, I'll go down to his condo and say, hey, honey, let's just go to a movie, and off we go. And we do a lot together during the day, but not every day. Most days I would say I am here by myself. And then at 11 o'clock at night, I lock my door and walk those 57 steps to climb into bed with my honey. And it's the most amazing marriage ever. I tell Jack, he's my favorite husband so far.
I think that there are a lot of older women
mm-hmm.
who would love this kind of arrangement.
You know, it's a trend. They're even building homes nowadays with two master bedrooms and two master
yes.
bathrooms, so that couples can
yes.
be more separate in their
yes.
homes.
And
it really helps.
You know, there's the idea, the prophet, let's see, he was Iranian or maybe Turkish. Gibran, yes, he said, let there be spaces in your togetherness.
Oh, I love that.
And as I'm speaking to you, I'm looking at a sculpture that I own. It's a beautiful, large sculpture by Joe Kinnebrew, and it's very sort of contemporary. So you have in this bronze sculpture a male part and a female part, and it's called the embrace. But there are spaces between. So I point that out when I see. As sometimes I point it out when I am seeing my clients, because to have some spaces between is usually a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Not usually. I think it's a must.
Yeah, well, I told you off the air, I've got it with my life, too, and works out really well. And
yeah,
we're
different. You have days that you look forward to,
the anticipation.
The old adage, "Absence makes the heart grow fonder," is certainly true, but it's also true as far as still maintaining your independence. You know, I still am in control of my condo. We didn't separate or mingle our money. We keep everything separate. I pay for my bills, my car expenses, my condo expenses, and whoever goes to the grocery store pays for the groceries. But, you know, for the most part, we're pretty independent. And I love it that way. I'm too old to be under the thumb of somebody, and I don't ever want to have to ask my husband if I can buy something.
No, you wouldn't want that.
You know, I want to be my own person, and I think more and more people are starting to see the importance of this, and a lot of people are living in two separate houses or two separate condos. Now, you mentioned that you're quite a distance from each other, aren't you?
Well, my fiancé, Brian, lives about 15 minutes away. It's not
15.
Too bad.
Well, that's not so bad. No, that's good.
We don't have 57 steps. We've got a few more than that. We have
I know,
to drive.
I'm spoiled.
Yeah. No, I think it's perfect. But for Brian and me, it works out really well.
Well, yes, because you're both
Wednesdays
very busy with
and
your
weekends,
careers.
And yeah. So,
yeah.
And then of course I have a home office in my condo here, so that works out too.
Yeah, just like I do. I've got an office. My second bedroom is completely an office. There's no bed in here, and I love it that way. I do have a bed in my other bedroom, but it's our guest bed. My cousin and a friend were here last week for a whole week, and they stayed in my condo, and it was just really, really nice, you know, to have guests and have them come. But, you know, for the most part, I'm here alone during the day, and I love it. It's like the greatest gift of my life to be able to be happily married and yet still be my own person. And, I think a lot of people especially in their 60s and 70s, I have a lot of friends, as you can imagine, living in Florida. There are quite a few older people down here. And all of my women friends have said to me at one time or another, "Oh, if my husband ever dies, I'm never getting married again." Or the ones that are already widowed or widowers, they say, I don't want to do that anymore. I had one good love, and that's enough. Well, I'm here to tell you that I don't think it is enough. I have so many friends who are alone and live alone, and I can tell they're not happy all the time. And I am. I am truly happy all the time, because when I want to be alone, I can be alone. And when I want to be with Jack, I can be with Jack. And it's so nice to have someone say, "Oh, poor baby," when you don't feel good.
I know.
Sometimes I even say to him, "Honey, it's time to say poor baby." And he'll say, "Oh, poor baby." And you know, it's nice to have someone just to snuggle up with in bed at night and to talk and just have that. The gift of touch is so important, no matter how old you are. I don't care if you're 80 or 90. The gift of touch is very powerful.
It's one reason that little old ladies get their hair done a lot if they're not in a relationship. It's a way to be
really
touched.
Oh my gosh, I never thought of that.
No,
that
we need to be touched, and so many older people are not touched enough. I really like what you're saying, and I think it makes a huge difference if you've got the best of both worlds. You've got a relationship, and you can get together and you can live separately. So you and the other thing is that somebody in my profession, his name is Dr. David Snarch, talks mm-hmm. about differentiation, and he says that one reason that older people have better sexual relationships is that they're more differentiated. They can be
really?
Themselves separate, and they can still merge at times and enjoy each other, but still be separate. So
I think there's a word for me that just comes into my mind when I think
yes.
about how my relationship with Jack, and it's the word tender. You
yeah.
know, you don't have that tenderness when you don't have a person in your life who is your partner. And you don't, I mean, you need to have that sexuality, and you need to have the touching and the back rubs and the tenderness and the ability to say, you know, honey, my shoulder hurts. Can
yes.
you lift my bra for me? You know,
yes.
who do you go to when you don't have that person? And so I want every woman who's in her 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s who reads my book to think about that. That, excuse me, how important it is to be willing to give in to another relationship, because it's joyful and tender.
It is joyful and it is tender. And I just, you have a relationship, I have a relationship. I just count my blessings all the time to have a relationship, to have. You're right about tenderness. You have somebody who you can be tender with. It's a beautiful thing. And we talked a little bit about this off the air. And that was about, you know, your best advice was not to give up. And
to keep
I agree.
Your options
I see. I, both clinically and even personally, I see too many people that, especially women, who fold up their tents. That's the way I describe it. They do kind of give up.
Well, isn't it because they may have not had a great relationship or a great love life or
yes.
whatever it is at the end of their marriage, whether they be, you know, if it ended because of death or divorce, it was probably not really happy, because if it was death, the person probably suffered or died in an awful way, you know, maybe it was a car accident or whatever, and maybe
yeah.
they're just so negative about starting over. But I'm here to tell you that my number one advice to women and to men in their older years is keep your options open and don't give up. And the third part of that is that it's okay to do things your way. A woman doesn't have to say, well, I'm not going to move into some guy's house and have to live with his things. You don't have to do that. You can
That's
keep
right.
two residences, and you can even be married that way. I mean, look at me. I'm married to Jack, and we live in two separate condos. And it works, and it's fun, and you know, he's the one, he's my go-to guy, and I'm his go-to gal. Whenever he needs anything, I'll take him to the doctor, I'll take him, you know, here or there, wherever. He takes me wherever, and I could always depend on him. We don't say no to each other, ever, because
Oh, I like
he's my guy.
That. You don't say no to each other.
Well, you know, Diana, my number one philosophy of life has always been this. Never say no to an opportunity unless it's illegal or immoral.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you have to say yes to everything in life that life offers you. And then you don't have to make any decisions, because you're always going to say yes, you know, and have an adventure. Because sometimes, one time my sister-in-law called me up.
Yeah.
And I was in a really, this was back in the early 2000s, I think, and it was before I moved to Florida and, you know, got my life back on track. And she calls me up one day and she said, well, what are you going to do for Mother's Day?
Mm.
And I said, it was coming up in 3 days. I said, well, I'm going to put on my rollerblades. I'm going to go downtown Milwaukee and I'm going to skate around Lake Michigan and pretend that I'm an old spinster who never had any children, because none of my children can come home for Mother's Day. And I had started the mother load of all pity parties, believe me.
Mm.
So she says to me, oh, no, you're not. And I said, what are you talking about? She says, you get your butt to Chicago's O'Hare Field tomorrow because you and I are flying to Japan.
I love this story. Go on, please.
And so I said, oh, we are we? She said, yes. Because, you know, I said before, my brother is a UPS pilot, and he had a five-day layover in Japan. And Linda was going to stay in his hotel room with him for those 5 days. And they knew they could get a cot in there for me. And so she said, we're going to Japan for 5 days, whether you like it or not. So I'll see you at O'Hare tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
Oh, well, now, she forced it.
my philosophy is never say no to an opportunity, remember?
Yes.
And so I had to say yes. And
yes.
It was the most magical adventure of my life. They put us in first class, and we were paying, because Linda worked for United Airlines as a gate
mm-hmm.
agent. So, you know, she got friend passes that were pennies on the dollar. And I think that whole trip cost me maybe $200 or $300. And we flew first class over and back. It was so wonderful. I felt like Mrs. Got Rocks. And I just couldn't believe how much fun we had. We went to Tokyo and Narita and Kamakura and just had the greatest adventure. And if I'd said, no, I want to feel sorry for myself because it's Mother's Day, I would have missed out on one of the best adventures of my
course.
Life.
Of course. So, your advice, and we're going to have to, the music is going to come on in a moment, so we have to stop.
Okay.
But you say, keep your options open and do it and don't give up. And, Patricia, these are such good suggestions because you've got to stay engaged in life as you age and be curious and have adventures, and you'll age more successfully. That's
absolutely
the truth.
And you'll grab on to all the ingredients you need to be happy, and those are simply someone to love, something to do, something to hope for, something to believe in, and laughter. And you will have a most amazing old age if you grab onto those. And notice I didn't say money in any of those.
I know, I know. I agree with you. Yes, someone to love. Someone
to
love.
Something to do.
And Patricia, you are an amazing woman. And you've given a lot of your wisdom, your insights through the years as a writer. Don't you feel good about that?
Well, it certainly has been fun to unzip my soul and expose all my mistakes and foibles and help others learn from my mistakes. But
well, you've
life.
Done a great
so
job, Patricia. We've got the music, so we're ending the program. Thank you so much.
Thank
for
you,
being
Dr.
my
Diana.
Guest.
I love you, and I wish
I love you
my
too.
Best neighbor.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Happy feet. Da-da-da, happy feet. Oh, I love it.